got Kim Woozy here.
Woo.
Hey, Kim.
Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Kim is on FaceTime with us right now, not live in New York. She's in the Bay Area.
Yep, that's correct.
Is that what? Like, where in the Bay Area are you located?
So I live in the East Bay. I actually moved to the suburbs like a year ago. Okay. So I'm currently in Fremont. It's actually where I grew up. But prior to that, I was in Berkeley, which is a lot more fun, but not mad at suburb life. There's actually like really good skate parks around here. So that's cool.
I was actually going to ask if there's a difference in skating in the suburbs versus...
I mean, I think the skate parks are a lot more inviting because there's like families and kids and stuff. And they're usually, they're now building them close to like things like, you know, a park or like, I don't know, water. Like in Fremont, literally the skate park is next to like water slides.
Yeah. That's so sick.
Yeah, it's so suburban. Like you could hang out there all day. Like you don't have to worry about like your car getting broken into or whatever. Yeah. So I'm not mad at living in the burbs.
Do you think that cities are considering skate parks as part of their like park and like city planning?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's definitely happening. I think that even with all the Olympic stuff, it's just happening more and more. It's like, if you are, you know, a local city planner, you want the whole point of like building, like using taxpayer money to build public spaces is so that like people actually use them. And if you go to like most tennis courts, like there's no one there. So yeah. I think that some of the more progressive cities are like, and not even progressive cities, just in general, they're starting to build stuff that like kids use. And I know the Tony Hawk Foundation is like a big part of that too.
Excuse me?
The Tony Hawk Foundation's a big part of that. Like that's like their initiative is to like get parks built.
Is the second takeaway from this that tennis is dying out?
Well, probably. And I don't know. I guess that's not fair. But honestly, like tennis courts are perfect for learning. Like a lot of our, like as we, because like for Skate Like a Girl, we're always looking for new spaces. We're always like, oh, we should just do a lesson on that like tennis court. But sometimes it's like not permitted or like we'll get in trouble or something. But I'm like, if they want to keep the tennis courts, that's cool. Just skate on them.
We'll still use them.
Yeah, they're like the perfect space, you know.
A quick backtrack. We're gonna get into what you did before, but what you're doing now is Skate Like a Girl as your main gig.
Yes. Yep. Skate Like a Girl is kind of my main job right now. So I co-direct the SF Bay Area chapter with Ashley Masters. And then Skate Like a Girl exists in Seattle, Portland, and then the Bay Area. So we have three chapters, and I work closely with Kristen Ebeling and Terrence, who's the Portland director. I know you guys had Kristen on the show before. And then aside from that, I do not so much this year as much, but in the previous years, I worked closely with Mimi Noop on WSA, which is her company, doing like consulting and sport organizing and like event production. One of our, like, I guess the things that I'm most proud of is the skate exchange event in Tokyo that happened last winter. But Mimi is now, one of the coaches, but more of like a team manager, for the USA skateboarding team. So she is very busy traveling around. And so I still do consulting, but it's not as frequent. There was kind of this time period where all of a sudden, like everyone and their mom, like wanted to do stuff in skateboarding, from like fashion and commercial to like Olympic stuff. And so we set up the company in that time in order to just kind of like guide people and like provide a service that wasn't really out there. And I feel like a lot of the companies that we've all had have like served their purpose and then they're like complete now. So it's like, okay, what's next? You know? Even with like Hoopla and Mafia, which we can talk more about, this is kind of like they existed for a time period because it was necessary and it was no longer needed. And so like moving on to the next thing, which is like exciting. I mean, it was like emotional and exciting at the same time. So yeah, currently Skate Like a Girl and then some consulting and working on a few new projects. One of them is with Vanessa Torres. Called Slumber Party. It's a new apparel brand that we are slowly but surely getting off the ground amongst the chaos of our other jobs and schedules. So
Every time I think about slumber party, I just like want to make a fort in my living room with like you and Vanessa and like, out and, like eat snacks.
That sounds fun.
I feel like
that's probably way more fun than the initial building of this brand itself.
Yeah, there's been, it's so funny because we've like had the Instagram page and there's just been nothing on there except the logo, and everyone's like, what's happening with it? I'm like, there's a lot of steps behind the scenes, like getting it set up. And we ran into some few initial like challenges that we weren't expecting legally. So it's just been a lot on the back end, but I feel like we both knew we wanted to do it like legitimately. So we wanted to take the proper steps. But there is things happening and more to come soon. And also like part of why I would say that it's just taking longer is that when we started it, we're like, I think we both had a lot more free time, and then all the stuff that's been happening recently, which is great. Like it's all really good stuff. We weren't really expecting, like she's literally in the country, like, I don't know, a few days out of every month because she's on the path to become an Olympic judge. And she's doing a lot of emceeing stuff and commentating and on air, like commentator analytics, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm super stoked for her because it's like that was kind of a position that, you know, wasn't there, and she essentially created it. So and she's really like fulfilled by it, which is cool. So
that's awesome. I love that. I never think anyone describes their friends that way, like, or describes anything someone does being like, yeah, they're really fulfilled by that. But I really like that.
Yeah. That's how you should want that for your friends.
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, we've all had jobs where we're just like, it's just a job, right? And I think as you get older, especially like for us, like I'm 35 now, Vanessa is a few years younger than me. I think it's just like you want to do like stuff that's meaningful because you've already put in a number of years where you're just doing stuff for money or doing stuff because you have to. So I'm stoked for her because I think at the end of the day, like she is wanting, like the only reason why she's into judging, and she can tell you this too, is just because she wants to make sure the girls are represented fairly at these contests that have more and more at stake, right? She, every time I talk to her, she's just like, yeah, like I just want to make sure that like these girls, because she's been there, she's been on the other side where you show up for a contest, you're like literally hacking your body, and then you walk away feeling like that you just didn't really get the time of day or that was judged unfairly. So
yeah, we know that it's in good hands with Vanessa, so that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Speaking of like kind of making sure that the girls are represented, to bring it back to you, I'm actually really interested in hearing about like what consulting for WSA like would look like, and like maybe a made up scenario, or if you don't have like crazy NDAs, a real scenario is fine too.
For sure. Yeah. I think the bulk of the work that we did in that time period was companies, I would say more like larger corporations coming to one of us. Actually, when we started WSA, it was Mimi, Lisa, Eileen was involved as well, and then myself. But the reason why was we kept getting hit up by like random, you know, emails, or someone would pass us an email saying, hey, like we are looking for either like casting, you know, talent in an ad, or we're looking to like, you know, bring on a female skateboarder, you know, to our brand, whether it was core or like, you know, outside of skateboarding. And it was kind of like in the past, we used to just spend our time helping these companies, and because we wanted the skaters to benefit, right? We're like looking out for the skaters and wanting to make sure they either get paid or their voice is heard and all that stuff. And this was kind of like basically what the alliance did, right, for specifically in competitive skateboarding. But when it was like started to be these kind of like outside of skateboarding, like non-endemic opportunities, it was just like people who understood, like companies who understood the value of like hiring like a consultant or like a third party contractor in order to like do the best job possible. And I think in the past, like people, like skateboarding wasn't that big, or they didn't see like as much commercial value. And then as that started to happen, people will be like, yeah, like, you know, we need a list of the top 10, you know, female skaters that can do this or would be willing to do this or would be a fit for our brand.
Yeah.
And so taking the time to like put together that information and offer them the knowledge and then sort of educate them on like the history. A lot of the companies, you know, I think that came from outside of skateboarding, like that we ended up working with appreciated that, which I thought was really refreshing because for so long, just in core skateboarding in the industry, like a lot of the dudes would just sort of like not take anything we said seriously. And we all had our own experiences like working inside the skateboarding industry where because of your gender, you know, you were considered less valid or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's actually honestly really refreshing to work with these brands outside of skateboarding who understood, you know, the value of someone's time and knowledge and not just like had this mentality of like, oh, well, you're not one of us. So therefore, like, you're not worth anything. We would basically just consult for these brands, whether it was like I think some examples would be like a commercial video shoot, some sort of advertising campaign, an event, or like core brands, like looking to add like female riders to their roster and having the, I would say, intelligence to be like, we don't know anything about, you know, what women's skateboarding looks like, and we're not going to try to pretend to know. Which I think is step one, because we've definitely talked to some.
Please pull that out as step one of being an ally.
And yeah.
Not just to women, but like in any underrepresented scenario, like step one,
yes, exactly. And like, that's so valuable to be able to let go of your ego. Like, yes, you're an expert in what you do, but like, you know, like I can't even tell you the number of people we talked to that were like wanting to work with us, but then came at it from the perspective of like, I know better than you. Then I'm just like, you don't need us. And straight up, they'd be like, ask us questions and then literally like try to convince us that we were wrong. Or it was just wild. I was like, all right, I don't know. Like, there needs, like, if you're hiring someone to consult, like, you know, the whole point is to like understand that they have experience and knowledge. And actually, Street League was one of the first clients. Like, that's why WSA kind of was formed, was because we had this opportunity to help bring women into Street League. And you know, they recognize the value in that. And shout out to actually Molly Magnifico, who was at Street League at the time, she was in charge of marketing, and she really championed for like hiring women and bringing women in. And now Molly's actually one of our board members at Skate Like a Girl. So that's what I love about our industry. It's like, no matter where, like, in the 12 maybe years, how long has it been? Like, more than 12 years. 2006 is when I started, 13 years that I've been around. Like, I've seen, the one thing that I've seen is that people move on to different companies. We all wear different hats, and it's really cool that it, like, what I love about it, it stays like a family. It stays connected. Like, if you're just a good person with good intentions, you end up being able to like continue those relationships on. So
that's awesome.
But anyways, we're going off on a tangent.
No, this is a good tangent. I was going to say, I've heard many people within skateboarding say that, and not just within the women's skateboarding world, like just across the board, of just like, there have been some long-standing dickheads, we know this, but like, I think for the most part, like, skateboarding has a really good way of like weeding like the shitty people out, and like the good ones kind of rising to the top.
Cool. I feel like it's so awesome that WSA really, and also WSA is Women's Skate Alliance. I know we didn't break that down, but just in case we're really base level. I think it's awesome that you guys like provided that, because I work in advertising and I have seen my fair share of situations, which I won't really mention, but been in my own fair share of situations as well, where like I have tried to suggest things at my job as someone who was like, I'm in this community and I see what you're doing and I don't think it's a great idea. And then it happens anyway. And I was like, I told you guys. So I think it's amazing that you guys have a service that is valuable and also just very, very necessary. But the people that are like willing to come to you and learn, it's like refreshing, because I feel like so many times in specifically advertising, or like the way it's, women's skateboarding's blown up, and I think like we've all probably experienced that, but like even from a monetary level, like seeing a woman skateboarder in an ad, I feel like right now equals dollar signs to some people, and they really don't go about it the correct way. So
yeah,
because I think that I'm sure you've obviously felt that, but that's a really exciting and necessary step. So
yeah, I mean, it's super interesting. Like I was at the Pushing Borders conference in Sweden this summer, and my panel was about core, right? Core, just the idea of core, like stay poor, stay core, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's like seeing the women's side, like for men, I guess the mainstream aspect is like when, you know, MTV and X Games and now the Olympics, like that's when like core went to the mainstream. And I think for women, like the version of that is when suddenly it was like trendy and fashionable. And it became sort of this like sought after culture or activity. When for so long it was so like not even marginalized, but like I felt like it was, people were like disgusted by it. Like it was in action. Like when I started in the action sports industry, if you listed out all the different sports and all the different genders, like if you took like men's motocross, like men's skateboarding, women's snowboarding, women's surfing, like women's skateboarding was literally at the bottom of the list. And I think looking back, a lot of that was because of who was in the decision making, you know, seats. And a lot of that was influenced by like LA culture, Hollywood culture, and what was quote unquote marketable or not. And because action sports is inevitably so tied to fashion and creative culture, that back then a lot of the conversations were just so like, looking back, offensive. But now, like when I was young and in it, I was just like, oh my God, I guess that's just how it is. But it was like, this girl's like not pretty enough, this girl's too fat, like this girl, all this stuff that obviously was very influenced by like Hollywood and LA culture, and the heart of the action sports industry being in like LA, Orange County, San Diego, it all kind of trickles down, right? Especially Orange County, that's like the pinnacle of, you know, that kind of materialistic culture. So it's just interesting because now you see, and I think I saw the shift in Hollywood as well, where with I think self-publishing and like alternative forms of like media, like where a lot of the content was decentralized. Like there was a time period where it was like the main channels, main cable channels, and that's where everyone got their, you know, entertainment. And then with the introduction of YouTube and all these streaming, like different people got to create different content, and it was much more diversified and decentralized. And I think that influenced just, you know, culture, subculture, and action sports in general. I think it's just, I don't know, like to see like female skateboarders be celebrated and promoted for being exactly how they are and not being forced to be this like image. Cause when I was in it, like at Osiris, that's very much how it was. That's how all the brands were. It was like, you need to be pretty and you need to be good. And if you're not, then sorry. Or like, we need to take you and make you look like this so that we can market you. I'm just so glad that is no longer like people's mentality, cause it was fake anyways. And you know, at the end of the day, like I think consumers or viewers or fans or whatever are super smart and conscious, and like that stuff ends up not lasting anyway. So
it is cool that, like, I mean, in a sense, like culture has demanded authenticity at this point.
Yeah,
like it's not even like the brands are catching on and being like, oh, we need to provide authenticity to catch up with all of these people who are self-publishing. It's like, what, people are smart and they're just not going to buy your product now,
exactly, because
they're gonna roll their eyes at like how inauthentic you are if you're not like being true to the people that you're choosing to collaborate and work with. And I think also like the fact that they're actually putting a lot of their dollars into the person's hands to create the like imagery, like what Skullcandy did, and like how Zora took those photos of like Jen Soto, and I think and Janthavi was also in there as well, like seeing that like they kind of like created those images really without Skullcandy like overseeing too much. And I think that's like a really cool example of like taking authenticity like one step further too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like letting these people kind of create with their friends, which is really cool.
Yeah, for sure. It's like so great to see that actually happening now. And I think like just looking back, like when I first started Osiris, like I was there as an intern and they already had like a women's collection, but it was really small and it was pretty bad. But then I got hired on because they put a woman in charge of the brand. And then we had women designers and people in charge of production that were doing all the stuff, like men and whatever, like all the products. But yeah. Because of that unique scenario where we had, like, my boss was a woman, and then I worked with the designer who's a woman, who's still one of my best friends today. And then they brought me in as an intern, but I was a participant of the culture, and sort of by just the nature of me being there, even though I was an intern and I was literally like running the MySpace page and like, and I was a receptionist at one point, like I was answering the phones. I was like, hey, we should consider doing this, or just by me being there, like the natural friendship and the organic kind of relationship with some of the skaters that we were flowing, like were created. And I was like, hey, maybe for the next shoot, we should invite so-and-so instead of like we literally were going on Craigslist and like looking for models. In the first shoot that I was a part of, it was probably like a month in, I was like pretty new. We had a bunch of models from Craigslist show up, and like maybe someone was like someone's friend, like really cool, awesome women, but like they weren't skaters, and it was just like so awkward. And like I remember some of the photos now, and I'm like, man, that was like so horrible. But after that, I was like, we don't need to like hire these randos off of Craigslist, like we can just use the skaters we're flowing. And then slowly over time we started, you know, and it just became more organic. And it just
started. You invented influencers, it sounds like. No,
they were like already sponsored, like they were legitimate skaters like back then. One of them was like Alicia, who it was like 11 at the time, and then there was a few other skaters like Annie Sullivan, Karen Jones. You know, they're now like Karen's a mom now, and like she still skates. But back then it was like they were already flowing these girls who were competing, and like some of the top girls for back then, but they weren't utilizing them for advertising, which I thought was like weird. I was like, why?
That really is like
sense. Like that makes no sense.
They're already a resource and you're already like have a relationship with them. It's just like this like low hanging fruit that they just like somehow
it was just like a gap in their brain on. It was like a blind spot in their brain to be like, okay, on the men's side we would never flow or pay like skaters who are am or pro and then hire models off the internet. That would be so weird, right? But for women, that's what they were doing. All the brands were doing that, like a lot of the brands were doing that, Etnies and like, and it was just like a mental gap for like these men, because I think they wanted to see what they thought was attractive. And for them, that was models. And they still respected some of the skaters for sure. But it was like the mental like difference of like, oh, wait, no, we can't like do a photo shoot with that girl. Like she's X, she's Y, she's not this, she's not that. But I'm just like, that makes no sense like at all. Because I don't know, I grew up playing like team sports. And like in my like childhood era, there was like the U.S. Women's soccer team that like, with like Brandi Chastain and like Mia Hamm and all these superstars who were like super good, and like Nike and Adidas were using them in ads. And even snowboarding was doing the same thing. Like snowboarding had like Carabeth Burnside and like all these amazing women they were using in the ads. So I'm just like, this makes no sense that like skateboarding isn't doing that. So anyways, like good thing that's changed now for the most part.
That was, by the way, the most like early 2000s sentence. I was running the MySpace page for Osiris.
Yeah, for sure. And you know the craziest part? It was like they brought me in to be this intern, and I was like doing very intern things, like clipping like product photos for the catalog and doing like photos, like really basic photoshopping. And then I was like, hey, we should like have this, you know, social media as well. And I remember when Facebook came out, because like Facebook came out when I was in college. I remember like in the beginning it was just like 10 universities, and then it was like 20 or whatever. And like I remember using it for the first time, and it was only college students. And then when they opened it up to everyone and they started having like pages and things, like I like remember saying we should like Osiris should have like a Facebook. I think it was just a profile back then, it wasn't a page. And they were just like, I don't know, like, we don't know what that is, and that seems irrelevant, but you can, like, run it if you want. And I was like, all right. So it was just funny because, like, now I think back at that, and now, like, that I'm older, I'm like, man, okay, like, one takeaway was that, like, the older I get, the less I should listen to myself. Like, I would, I think I should listen to, like, a 19-year-old because they know what's relevant, because, like, back then that was me, and they, like, didn't get it. They couldn't understand it, and I was like, that was such an important lesson, because now I'm like, all right, if I ever have an idea, I should, like, run this by someone who's, like, way younger, you know?
Unless that's literally me all the time. I'm 31 now, and I'm like, all right, let me just, like, find a 19-year-old and, like, see what's up.
Yeah, like, check it. That came up at the Pushing Borders conference. Someone mentioned the idea of, like, having a youth mentor. Like, everyone should have a youth mentor. And I was like, oh, my God, it's genius.
Yeah.
So, like, to find someone younger than you to, like, mentor you.
I love, like, that.
And then knock it.
Too.
Yeah, totally.
I also think that's, like, skateboarding in general, it's like that's the only community in which it's, like, so accepting to talk to people of all ages too, I think.
Yeah.
Not to sound creepy, but, like, I think it's very, like, I interact with so many people younger than me that I would never have come across, just because I'm like, we're building this community and we're all here for the same thing and nice and happy. But
and, like, I want to make sure that I'm creating a safe space for, like, especially, like, the, like, 12, like, you know, like, 8 to, like, 14-ish, like, girls that we work with, like, I don't, like, every once in a while, I'm like, wow, that conversation that I had with her was, like, a pretty important conversation, and I'm really glad that I got to create this safe space that, like, she felt comfortable having that conversation with me, and that, like, they have something, you know, and, like, but I definitely do find myself like, oh yeah, I'm just friends with 14-year-olds now.
I mean, for sure. Date like a girl really has that effect on your life.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about that all the time. Like, skateboarding is one of the few, like, you know, activities or culture, sport, whatever you want to call it, that is intergenerational. Like, there's no other physical, I mean, maybe, like, definitely some creative culture, like music, I would imagine is similar. Like, because in the Bay, we have, like, Bay Area Girls Rock Camp, which is, like, really similar to Skate Like a Girl. But it's one of the few, like, public, like, activities that take place in public space that's intergenerational. So it's like, you can interact with someone younger, you can interact with someone older. And I think that's really valuable. Like, there's not a lot of examples of that. So,
it was such a, like, tied up, like, conversation. I want to get a little bit more into what you've done in the past that kind of brought you to this Skate Like a Girl world. So we talked a little bit about Osiris.
Yeah.
And kind of where did you go from there? Or where were you before Osiris, even if that's relevant?
Yeah, so, I mean, I could be really detailed or I can be very, like, close notes. Which version do you want?
Why don't we go with, like, medium, and then I'll poke you for more.
For sure. Yeah, in college, actually, I worked the first, I mean, I had a bunch of random, like, internships and, like, you know, part-time jobs, like, in high school and college, but in college, like, I would say before Osiris, my first, like, taste of, like, the industry was I actually worked on campus. I went to UC San Diego, and we had this campus store that was, like, kind of like a mini REI, like, outdoor gear, but we also rented, like, surfboards and wetsuits and snowboards and ski equipment and, like, camping gear, like, to the student, like, and faculty population. But at that job was the first time I went to ASR, which was, like, the Action Sports Retailer trade show that doesn't exist anymore. I guess now that's kind of, like, agenda, but, and I was just, like, introduced into this whole world, that was just, like, so fun and amazing. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. So I think that was the kind of the beginning for me, is, like, going to my first ASR and then working at Osiris and being like, this is definitely, like, what I want to do. Like, I think as soon as I started working there, I was like, I didn't even know that, like, that existed, you know? Like, I went to school for video and film, and I thought that I wanted to, like, go into Hollywood and, like, work on, like, production of movies. But as I went through school in my 4 years at UCSD, I definitely, like, shifted my mindset, because a lot of my professors were independent, like, indie filmmakers and documentary filmmakers from, like, Mexico and France. And it was, like, literally the opposite of Hollywood. And I understood that, like, if you live in SoCal and you are a filmmaker and you live in San Diego, you're intentionally choosing to not be a part of Hollywood. And so the education that I got was very much like the opposite of Hollywood. Cause growing up, I was just like this kid in suburbia and I was like, oh my God, movie is like so cool. And then I got just the alternative side of it, which is like, you know, really like focusing on like using storytelling, not as a commercial vehicle, but like as a way to like change the world and like really tell stories and like report journalism, things like that. So, anyways, but yeah, so then I ended up at Osiris, and then after like the recession in 2009, I was at Osiris for 3 years, and the recession hit 2009, and that's when all the companies were just cutting their budgets left and right because they had to. And of course the first thing to go was like the women's budget, because that was still pretty small in the scope of like all the business. And even though we were able to grow it, you know, like pretty awesome, like in terms of like just numbers, they still, that was still the first thing they cut because they had to, that wasn't like their bread and butter. So I remember I got laid off, which I was actually stoked about because, I was able to get like a severance, and back then there was like health insurance for like a year. I was like, this is amazing. It was amazing.
I also got laid off of my first job. So right?
So I was like, this is such a unique opportunity. Like I got to take advantage. And I reconnected with a buddy of mine from college. His name is Johnny. And he was also, we both went to school for video production, and we were, you know, doing like, we did like group projects together. And he was actually working at S1, the helmet company, after doing some like commercial corporate video production. So we came back together and we were like, dude, like we have to make videos. Like that's been like our dream. And like, now that we have some connections, like, and like actually interesting subjects to shoot, we started literally just making videos of the team writers at Osiris that I became friends with. Karen Jones, who was like, you know, a vert skater at the time, she was definitely like totally, I think, one of the biggest inspirations for, you know, what became Mafia Production, Mafia.com and Mafia Productions, and then eventually Mafia TV, because she was like always amped to shoot. She was very creative. She was like in a band. She was down to be in front of the camera. And she was like, I have this idea, let's make this, or let's make this. So we just started making videos, and then it kind of took off from there. But I think that at that time, because all the companies were cutting their budgets, we looked more towards like where other like intersecting cultures that we could actually like successfully, like sustainably run a business from. And we ended up doing a bunch of stuff with DJs, and like, for some reason, I guess that makes sense. Like during the recession, like everyone started partying and it was like this huge explosion. And I know, Kristen, we've talked about this, but like for whatever reason, like it was a perfect timing of like people losing their jobs, like, you know, like the club scene and just like the whole like nightlife scene really kind of like taking.
It really was a magical time.
Yeah. And like, I think also like, it was like this weird, like stars aligning with technology too. Cause that's when like DJs could literally take their laptops and it wasn't about like carting around, you know, vinyl anymore. So we ended up through just some of our connections working with, Tina T, who was a Red Bull DJ, and she was just starting this DJ sleepaway camp for kids. It was like Woodward, but for like kids who wanted to learn to DJ. So we went and shot the very first camp spinoff, and we met all these awesome DJs, and some pretty like well-known DJs too. She was really good friends with like, I think, DJ AM and like that whole crew. So we just ended, and it was like the perfect timing because we were still young and we're like, oh my God, like we don't want to work in an office. So we ended up shooting all these DJs, and then DJing is really similar to skateboarding where, especially back then too, like women were being objectified and it was like all these model DJs and like Paris Hilton was DJing and like, and like, so we met these really amazing women who were like legit turntableless. And we just started kind of offering our talents, which is video and photography production, to what they were doing. And we ended up doing that, and it was really fun. Like we ended up going to some amazing places. We like went to Singapore with Tina and shot like F1. Like we went to like New York Fashion Week with her because she was doing some stuff for like a hair company. And it was like we were so like fish out of water. Actually, that was the last time I was in New York. I'm just like, wow, like I haven't been back in so long, and it was probably like 2011.
Wow.
But yeah, I just remember.
Let's just put that out there.
Yeah, she was like, I'm shooting this. She's like, I'm doing this gig. Like, do you guys want to be the media production? And she like plugged us in and like we got paid and like, we flew out there. And I think we were like so naive. We didn't know any. We were like these kids from California, like San Diego. We got, and she was like, yeah, like you guys can just like crash in my hotel room. And we're like, okay, cool. And back then, like, gear was crazy. We had like these massive like suitcases. Yeah. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, here's my DSLR in my hand. It was like big cameras and like heavy ass tripods and things like that. And we go out there, we have like all our gear, like we brought our skateboards, and we're like, cool, like we'll crash at your hotel room. We like show up at our hotel, and it's like literally like a box, and we're like, how is this a hotel? Like, and because everything in New York's like really small, right? And we're like, there's no way there's room for us. Like, this is wild. Yeah. So we ended up like dispersing and crashing at different people's houses, and every morning we like woke up hungover and like had to gather all our like heavy ass gear. We're like skating through the streets of New York trying to get to the venue on time, like sweating, like trying not to throw up, and like showing up in like this fashion world, and these people were super like, we totally did not belong. They're just like, who the fuck are these kids? Like, we're like sweating. Yeah. And like Johnny
anywhere now.
I'm sweating. No one knows who I am.
Yeah. They're all like prim and proper, like all put together, and we're just like where do we go? That was a trip, actually. Filming like in that world was so crazy. It was like, I just remember being like, all right, this is not what I want to do, because like it was weird. Like, we did this one runway show, and these guys were like, it was kind of like the paparazzi kind of vibe, where all the photographers were like these gnarly dudes who were just like super like, I don't know, you could tell they've been doing that forever, and just like grizzled, and you had to like tape off your little area, and like everyone was all like defensive and aggro. And I was just like, this is like, not, this is not that fun.
I'm just here to shoot some DJs. Like, let's not do this.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like a weird, but it was a really good experience too. We were just like, wow, like that's something I never would have done. But, so yeah, we ended up just like doing a lot of like lifestyle stuff, like in LA and just like Southern California, whether it was like music or fashion or culture, that kind of was like tied back in. But after doing that for a few years, we're like, all right, that was really fun, and like, we're not going to be 24 forever, so we need to like refocus. And that's essentially where like Mafia TV was born. Like, after a few years of just doing a lot of production, we're like, okay, what's really needed? Like, why did we start this in the first place? Because I think we kind of got lost in the sauce. And it was really, yeah, for sure. Like, we were like just idiots, I feel like, some of the times. And it's just like, and honestly, it was like some of the most exciting times, you know, like for sure. But I think we were lucky that we had that opportunity to just explore and like do whatever and mess up. And then at the same time, that helped us like grow and like reel it back in. And like, ultimately, when we came back to, you know, the foundation, it was always about like empowering women and like showcasing like subcultures that weren't really getting the mainstream, you know, exposure. So that's when as technology improved, like people started being able to like create their own content. So it was really awesome to see other people, whether they were filmers or editors or the skaters or athletes themselves, make their own edits with like GoPros and iPhones and all that stuff. So that's when we were like, okay, what is missing now is like a place for all of this to live and like being able to like present it in one location. And that's kind of where the idea for Mafia TV started. So we were still like producing our own content, but it was about just like, you know, showcasing other people's content as well. So I think that was, you know, that was around like 2014. And then, you know, we rebuilt the site. And then at the same time, like, I started doing more events, because I was like, okay, the screen inspiration's great, but I felt like I personally missed like being like live on the ground, like in person with people. And that's essentially what then brought me to Skate Like a Girl, is like, I think, first of all, like, Mafia wasn't succeeding as like financially as a company, because like selling bread and content and just the whole like shift in advertising, where a lot of brands could just self again, self-published through social media, like wasn't needed. Like when I first started in the industry, it was like advertising in magazines was like the key, right? And I think you guys both work in advertising too, so you know. But since that really shifted, it was like, all right, you don't need, as like a brand, you don't necessarily need as much third-party advertising. You could just advertise directly yourself through social media.
I can't say that too loud.
Well, what I'm saying now, the shift now is like, you can do that, but it's not as, I think that when brands create their own content, at the end of the day, it's an ad, right? So like you are just, it's as a brand creating your own content, you're still selling your product. But now the value and opportunity for media outlets is the authentic, like, community building, like the storytelling.
Not just for us, but like, I fully do agree in that.
Yeah. And it's like so important because at the end of the day, a brand has to hit their bottom line, and any business does, but with like Quell or Yeah Girl or Girl Strat or whatever other outlets, like, you guys are genuinely like creating community and doing things because you care and that it's something you want to see, not because you're like trying to sell shoes or something. And I think now there's an opportunity for the brands to like partner with the media outlets as a connection to the community on the ground participants. Like same thing with Scale Like a Girl. Like we're not a media outlet, but there's a real live community that's like on the ground, that's like physical, like in a city that, you know, no matter how much money they invest in an Instagram campaign, it's like not going to be the same. So
I see that all the time at my job too, where you're like, I even remember I've just switched jobs and the last thing I worked on, we were like so invested. Everyone was like, oh my God, this is like, it was like late nights forever and ever and ever. And then in reality, it just ran on their Instagram and like no one knows what happened or that it even launched. And so it's like,
it's like a blip in the internet.
If they're not following you, why would they see it?
Yeah.
Exactly. So,
Or with the saturation of social media, it's like you're not even maybe going to be able to see it anyway because of feeds and what we were talking about before, shadow banning and all that stuff. It's like you might, who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're paying to, it's paid media through Instagram, because that's really the only way you'll get to show anyone anything. But
yeah. And I think that's where like the organic partnerships are like value. Like people, it's like, if it is authentic, people can, they hear that, they see that, you know, it's like you don't have to force it. And I think that like in today's like world of like, you know, technology and business, it's like you, every brand has to be everything. But I also think that like, that I would love to see that not continue to be that way. Instead, people like find the area, the lane that they're good at, like go down it and then everyone collaborate instead of every brand or company having to be all the things, you know? Yeah, so 100%. It's just exhausting. Like you can't be good at all the things. And it's like, you're reinventing the wheel over and over and over, where you can just collaborate with other people that are doing it, you know, like in their specific way. So, but I guess to answer your question, like I moved back to the Bay after living in Southern California for like over a decade. I lived in San Diego and Orange County, and I was in LA a lot. And then I was just ready to come home, 'cause like, this is where I'm from. And I kind of was, I think I identified that I needed to like move into the next chapter of my life, because I felt like I love San Diego. It's an amazing city.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I was doing the same thing I was doing like when I was 21. And I was like, okay, it's like time to like move on to the next, like it wasn't fulfilling anymore, you know?
Right.
And so after moving back up to the Bay, I already knew of Skate Like a Girl. I think it was Lisa who connected me to Kristen and Nancy, who are running Skate Like a Girl in Seattle. And then I remember going to WAF for the first time. I think it was WAF 6. And I was like, this is crazy. Like after being in SoCal and like Orange County bubble, like San Diego bubble, LA bubble, and then going to Seattle and seeing the skate community up there, I was like, this is amazing. And then Mafia became the media partner for Wheels of Fortune, 'cause like no one was taking photos. There was like nothing. I was like, oh my God, like we have to like, you know, showcase this. I know. And it was like, I love Skate Like a Girl because it was a nonprofit, very grassroots community. It was never about, you know, like trying to like make money or be some global organization. And that's why I really was excited to like empower them however they could. And so one of the first things we did was like, I was like, all right, Kristen, like, can we shoot photos? Like, can I make a photo gallery? And she was like, sure. And like, that was kind of the beginning of, I think, being able to like share with the world, like how special this like community and space was. Mm-hmm. And then, as Kristen will be the first to tell you, like marketing is like not her thing. And so being able to do that. And then when I moved back to the Bay, there was actually a chapter already in the SF Bay Area. And I met up with some of the people who were running it back then, and it was very grassroots. It was just like meetups. They didn't do lessons or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it was the first time that I felt invited to skate. And that was like huge for me because I worked in the industry for so long, but I never felt like it was like my space or turn or even like opportunity to skate. Cause either I was working, which meant I was taking photos, or like I was like at X Games. So I'm like not about to like skate the course at X Games. Like you're not even allowed to. So it was like my introduction to skateboarding was like pro skater. So I'm like, there's no way I could like be like them. So I'm just not even going to try. Right. So I never really knew any beginner skateboarders. And then meeting the crew in the Bay was like super inspiring. So I was like, wow, like this is, I remember, I think it was Kat Sai, like who was one of the early kind of founders of Skate Like a Girl in the Bay. She was just like, dude, like you should skate. Like, let me teach you something. And like, I was like, no one's ever like said that to me.
Yeah.
So it was really cool. And I was like, this is awesome. So like I started skating like the most I ever have in my life, like when I moved back to the Bay with that crew.
Oh, awesome.
And then the story is that Seattle was growing. Portland was growing. They were getting legit. They had insurance. We had like board members and they were basically like, look to the Bay chapter. They were like, if you guys want to keep existing, like you got to step up and formalize. And like at that time, no one was in a position to do that. And so they literally put the chapter on hold for like a year and a half, and we couldn't do events. Like we couldn't do anything public because it was just a liability. Then about, I think it was 2017. I met Ashley Masters, who came to a panel that I was speaking on that was put on by my friend Sam, who was running this website called Work in Skateboarding. Mm-hmm. And after the panel, there was like a breakout group and Ashley was in my group and she was like, I've been teaching skateboarding for 15 years. And I was like, who are you? Like, where have you been? Like, like how do I not know you? And she's just like, is not really a social media person. Like, I love Ashley because if you go to her Instagram, it's just like a bunch of flyers and it's like not updated. And she's like the first to say like, yeah, I suck at Instagram. But it's because she's like so present in real life and she's so fun that she's not like spending all her time like doing this, you know? So anyways, like we got to talking and I was just like, dude, like if you and I team up, we could like take on this chapter. And like the timing was perfect. And Kristen was like, dude, I'll mentor you guys. Like, let's just get on a call every week. So we did that. And then fast forward, what, 2.5 years later, like we're both part-time, you know, like positions, directors, and we have 4 staff right now. So there's 6 of us. Yeah. And we have like, I want to say like 10 to 15 volunteers. And we were doing year-round programming now. So it's pretty awesome. Exciting. This is like super fulfilling. Like I definitely was at this point where I was like ready to give up on everything because like Mafia was failing and I was like, I can't do it, like screw it, like screw this industry, like it's never gonna happen. And this was like before anyone had, like no one was getting paid, you know, like there was no success at all and there was no even like trace of success where like I literally was like, I think this is just a hobby, we should like just, I should just go do something else, you know. But luckily I didn't go down that path. And and then just being able to shift away from like, I was very attached to it looking one way, which was like having Mafia TV succeed. And once I let go of that attachment, I was like, okay, if I'm not afraid of failure, like what would I do? What could I do? And so I just started trying new things. And then I was like, all right, well, Skate Like a Girl is like, it's not the same as a media production company or a media platform, but the mission is the same, right? Like inspiring other people and like connecting the community. So, so yeah, I'm just like grateful that I was able to like kind of move past that mentality of failure.
Right.
And for sure. Yeah. And it's just, I think again, like getting away from the screen and like being on the ground and meeting people was like really fulfilling and rewarding. And that was missing for sure. Cause when I was doing Mafia, it was just me in front of a computer for like 8 hours and it was like pretty draining. So I'm still in front of a computer a lot, but at least I get to like go to the event or go to summer camp or whatever, you know?
Totally. Damn. I remember when I first was like doing the research for Quell, which was my like senior thesis project in college, I literally read so like everything possible about Mafia and about you. So it's like,
that's for awesome.
Me to hear, like, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just calling you right now to hear like this whole backstory. But then like to you saying like, ugh, when I accepted that it was a failure, I was like, no, to me, that was like so cool. When I was like researching this in college, I was like, that's my dream. I want to do something just like that. So it's like, a weird not deja vu but very trippy.
It's like surreal. Yeah.
Like, oh, dude, hey.
I mean, that's amazing, like honestly, and now you guys are doing it, you know?
Yeah,
like I think
allegedly.
If the, allegedly. No, you guys are crushing it. I just got the zine by the way.
Oh,
in the mail.
I actually
like,
thought about that and I was like, maybe I don't put myself on blast if I forgot to send it to you by asking you in the middle of recording this.
No, I like I hadn't checked the mail in a minute and then I got it and I was like, this thing is beautiful. Like I've never seen like a physical copy before. But it's amazing. I love how it's like super thick and like the quality of the paper and the colors. I'm just like, yes, I love this. Like I'm all about color. So like, I love zines, but like, I'm always just like, ah, black and white. Like I get it for like logistical purposes, but I'm like such a color person.
And that's why like, I like that we do it twice a year. Cause it like gives us the time and like, not that we have a budget, but like, we don't have to spread it thin over like a lot of work.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No. I think that's awesome. It's amazing. And I think if like, that's what I think I really got too, is like, it just took time, you know, like even for though sure. Mafia technically was a failure from a business standpoint, like the fact that like, I'm talking to you right now and you're saying that you actually looked at it. Because half the time I was like, is anyone even looking at this shit? Well, like, I have no idea, you know, like, there's like likes and comments, but it wasn't as real, you know. It was like people would email us and I was like, oh, it's really cool. But I felt like what was missing was like the connection. And that's why I think now doing things like, you know, meetups or events, like people get to connect in real life. And I think for a minute that was kind of missing. So I'm glad that, and I'm always like, and I've talked to, you know, like Imke who runs Girl Shred and I'm friends with Sarah. And I'm always just like, dude, like I want to share with you guys as much knowledge as I can, because I couldn't figure it out. And I think it was also a timing thing.
Yeah.
But I would love to see. I mean, sure. Yeah. Like I think so. That's the case for a lot of, like, I think even if we look at some of the pro skaters, like I think Vanessa and like, you know, care about Burnside, like way ahead of their time. And just to be able to acknowledge like that, just because you had different circumstances doesn't mean that like the whole community can't thrive and win. And I think that's the part that I'm most stoked on, that now there's multiple media outlets and I'm like, that's all I ever wanted. Cause the whole reason why I even started Mafia was because I was like, I don't have like a website or a thing, a magazine that like I would want to read. And like I ended up just creating like, what would I want to see if I went to like this website every day, you know?
100%.
So
damn. What a weird world, but
full circle.
Doing what you did, we get to do what we do.
Yeah, I'm. So then that's like,
you're like so generous with your wisdom and like willing to share it too with everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's all I ever wanted was just more friends to like hang out with and like do things with. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. That's
I think so much too, to your point, like if Quell ended tomorrow, I wouldn't think of it as a failure. Like I think there's so much like emotional element of it that I'm like, I feel fulfilled by this.
Yeah.
I feel fulfillment is the key word of this episode, I think.
Yeah. For sure.
We've used it a lot, but no, it's like good.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, unless you had a question, I don't want to
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, when did you start skating before you got into the industry? I know we're like really doing this backwards today, but
that's okay. I got my first skateboard when I was probably like 12, and my uncle, it's actually a pretty good story. My uncle gave me a skateboard. It was a Vision Gator board, and I still have it.
I have no idea what that means.
I know, it like, right? It's like 80s, like has rails on the side.
Plastic, right?
No, it was like a wood board. Okay. I have it in the other room. I can grab it. It's funny because like I didn't know anything about the culture, but my uncle and aunt and my cousin lived in San Francisco, and like obviously that is one of the kind of like places of influence and culture. Mm-hmm. But he was just, he gave the board to me and my brother, and he was like, yeah, like your cousin doesn't really use this anymore, so if you guys want it, great. So like we literally just rode around on it like on our butts because we were like little kids, and like I'd never seen a picture or video or anyone skateboarding ever. So it was just this toy that we had in our garage. And then it wasn't actually until high school that I started getting more into skateboarding. And the way that I got into it, it's kind of funny. So every year, every winter, my parents would take us to Tahoe, which is like 4 hours from the Bay Area. And we go skiing, right? So like we were like super grateful and lucky to be able to do that every winter. And like I remember I was like probably like 13 and I was like skiing with my mom and I saw someone snowboard for the first time. And I was like, oh my God, that looks so fun and cool. Like way cooler than skiing. And she was like, please never do that. And of course I was like, let me try. So I rented a snowboard and like took a lesson. And that's the crazy thing about snowboarding too, is that like, I noticed that if you look at the history, why skateboarding and snowboarding, like why skateboarding historically been exclusive to women and why snowboarding has not, like has been inclusive, right, is that it started out as like this family activity where you could take a lesson, like literally from day one. And as I got deeper into the industry, I met some of these pioneers and there were women in decision-making roles from the very beginning because it was not like this like raw dude, like male aggression. It was just like, it was like snowboarders versus skiers versus, you know, like men versus women. So that was like literally one of the differences. But yeah, so I was like snowboarding just like once a year and I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. And then my friends and I in high school, we had this one teacher who was a surfer. Like he'd go to Mavericks every winter. He would like literally take like a week off work and like go to Mavericks to like watch the contest. Mm-hmm. And he would always skate in the parking lot, like on a cruiser board. And we're like, oh my God, that's so cool. So we ended up getting like longboard, like cruiser boards. And like, we learned to skate just like in and around school and like in the like suburban neighborhoods. And that was sort of like my entry into skateboarding. It was like, I love snowboarding. It's so fun. How could I do it when we're not, you know, in the mountains? Mm-hmm. And then in college, that's like, I brought my skateboard to college and I would just skate to class like every day. And I always wanted to learn to do tricks. And I remember going and getting like a regular skateboard and like convincing my roommate who was like a surfer to like go to the skate park. And this was like freshman year of college, right? So we're like total noobs. We're like, we have no idea. We just like show up at the skate park. I'm like, yeah, well, I don't know. We'll just figure it out. Mm-hmm. We go there and like, it's so uninviting. We're just like, oh my God, we're idiots. Like eat shit a few times. And we're like, all right, this is awkward. Like let's leave. So yeah, just never had the chance to like actually learn to do tricks, but like I skated on campus all the time. Like people like knew me because back then, again, like not that many girls skated and people like would know me. They're like, oh yeah, I've seen you like skate to class and like, or I've seen you like eat shit or whatever. Like I've had some, definitely some good spills. So I think just like loving like going fast and like the freedom of just skating around, like highlight of my day, you know. And then it wasn't until Osiris, until I started actually meeting other like actual skateboarders who then like, you know, I was like, oh wow, like this is a whole new world of like transition skating, street skating, like whatever. I knew that existed, but it just never really like, I don't know, like I do remember seeing Vanessa and Lacey and Mimi and Lindsay and Amy and like all the girls in, like I had this one magazine called SG Mag. I've talked about this in like other interviews or whatever, but it was this one magazine that started out as Surfer Girl magazine, and then at one point they flipped to surf, skate, and snow. So it was like all just like SoCal like lifestyle culture. But the editors back then, who I now know, I think again they were just ahead of their time too. They had like some pretty progressive stuff for back then, like in the magazine, you know. And that's how I knew that like there was also girls like street skating and transition skating. And I think also why like I was called to go, like inspired to like go to school in like Southern California. So yeah, it was like, I think just this weird entry where I cruiser skated and snowboarded, and but then working at Osiris, I was definitely still like an outsider, because that's like a core, you know, core skate company, like street. But it was actually pretty cool, because they were, for the most part, they were just chill and they were just like, do whatever you want with the girls brand. Like they didn't really care. Right. So part of like the time that I was there, I was able to like decide which athletes that I, you know, wanted to work with. So we sponsored some snowboarders, some surfers, some wakeboarders, and definitely skaters. And that's when like Leticia was like 14 years old. She like was on Flow at Osiris through one of the founders, and she would come into the office. She didn't speak any English. She would come to the office, and Anna Paula, who was her friend and sort of like a, you know, a mentor type role, would like translate for her. And then we helped her get her paperwork to go to school in Hollywood. And then she was actually the first girl that they paid, which was pretty big. Like back then it didn't, she was just so good. And like the guys kind of were able to get past the like, oh, she's a girl with her. And they paid her, which was amazing. And then with, you know, girls like Alicia, and you know, it was just like they were just children. Like literally Alicia would come to my office, and like she was 11, and so she was either with you know, her mom or one of the founders of Osiris, and like he would be in a meeting or something, because they would go to the skate park, and she would just like come to my office, and I'm like, I don't know what to do with this kid. Like she was so shy too. Like she never talked. And I love Alicia. She's like my little sister, but I would just give her a box of stickers to play with, because I was like, I didn't have any like child like skills in like working with children. So I would like literally just give her this box of stickers, and she would be like silent playing with these stickers for like an hour on the ground of my office. And I'm just like, but it was cool, because we eventually like, then when she got old enough to like kind of travel on her own, like that's when there was this time period. It was, it was kind of, it was during Mafia, but she was old enough to start like going to events on her own. And her mom like knew me and trusted me. So I would like take her along. And that's when I met Lizzie, and her and Lizzie were like really good friends. Lizzie was a little bit older, and I legit felt like I was like their like, not really babysitter, but like older person who like could drive and like, you know, take them places. And it was pretty fun. It was like a fun time period where I was like this weird in between of like, I'm not your mom, but like I'm definitely older than you. And like it was their first time getting to like go places without their parents. So we got into some fun times. Like, oh my God, we almost got arrested at Woodward West, because Lizzie brought fireworks, and she was like, I know this one spot. Cause she, so we, Lizzie's hilarious. Like I'm sure she remembers the story, but she was like just pretty wild when she was young, but in like a very low key way. Like she's very shy, polite when you meet her, but like we pick her up. We're like driving to Woodward West, and she's like, oh yeah, I brought like halfway into the drive. She's like, oh yeah, I brought fireworks. And we're like, what? And she's like, yeah, they're in the back. And I'm like, all right, that doesn't really sound safe, but whatever. Like they had been to Woodward before. Right. And, so she's like, yeah, I know the spot where we can light them off. And I'm like, okay. So me and Johnny are like, I mean, I guess like this would be at least a good like video. Like we could film it and be like funny content.
Right.
And so we like drive off campus, and then like pretty late at night we find this like canyon, and she's like, yeah, this is the spot that's like legit. And we're like, all right. So she like lights off these fireworks, right? And it's super loud, like super super loud. We're like, oh my God, that's like way louder than we thought. And we're like, we need to get the hell out of here, right? And this is like middle of summer, like wildfires are a thing, right?
Right.
Not wildfires, but just, yeah, like,
yeah,
brush. And like nowadays, like you literally, it's like a felony to like, yeah, play with fire in like wilderness, right?
Yeah.
So we like, oh my God. So we were like, we need to get out of here. And like, literally as we're driving up the like road in, this dude comes like barreling down in a truck and he's like trying to like barricade our car. And he's like pissed. And he like gets out of his car, like storms up to our door. And he's like, what did you guys do? Like, he was just going off. He's like, do you know how dangerous this is? We're like, oh my God. And we're like, I don't even know what we said. We, I'm sure, tried to like deny. And then we drove back and we're all like freaking out. And like, we go to like the staff housing where we're staying. And we're all like, oh my God, we're going to get arrested. And then he ended up being, he was like, I forget what the title was, but he was like on the board of this county or something like that. He was like,
yeah,
from the local like government.
Yeah.
And we're like, we're screwed. And then we're like, okay, we need to hide my car. So we try to like park it in like a faraway spot, which obviously like didn't work.
Yeah.
And literally like, we're just panicking. And like, I want to say Alicia's mom was there, but like, I don't know what we said to her, but all of a sudden, like 10 minutes later, there's like three fire trucks, like screaming up the hill, like to our housing. And we're like, oh my God, like cops, fire trucks. They obviously find my car. And we end up just being like, we're like, we have to like, we can't hide. We're not like that stupid. So we go out and talk to them. And we basically were like, it was Lizzie, because she's like underage. I'm like 25, you know?
Right.
And Johnny are like 25. We're like, we're not going to jail. And we just like came clean and we told the cops or the firemen. And because Lizzie was a minor, I think she was probably like, I don't know, 16 or 17. They let her go with just a ticket. And she had to pay the fine. I think it was like $300, which for her back then, that was like a shit ton of money. Like, she was bummed. But luckily we didn't get to jail. And I was just like, oh my God, that was like a horrible situation.
That's very funny.
So I learned my lesson. I'm like, man, teen skaters, like, just cause, and that, I think Lizzie and Alicia back then, like, they just look like nice, you know, like friendly, like law abiding little girls. Yeah. And like, so they were able to get away with a lot and like pull these pranks. And
that's so sick.
I was just like, I couldn't even be mad at them, because I was like, that's exactly how I was at that age. Like, we were just like pulling jackass pranks like left and right, because we were just like bored and whatever, you know. So anyways, I don't know how she feels about me telling that story, but she's grown up now and she's like gonna be an Olympian, so
yeah, I think
luckily she didn't go to jail in freaking wherever Woodward West is. It's like in Timbuktu. It's like Sketchville. Like, it's like crackheads, you know.
I was gonna say, you're the person that, like, what are the people who work at the prison, at jail, like, what are they called?
The guard?
I'm just imagining like a random person with like missing teeth, like in like a small, like little, like county jail.
Yeah.
Not a receptionist, but like a clerk.
Oh, just a corrections officer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what you want to be doing.
No.
Well, I'm glad. That's like the going back to us being like, you can, like, we're just like a bunch of old people who have like teenage friends. Like, you have to remember that you're older than a teenager sometimes. I would still be like, fuck it, let's do it, but I feel like I definitely understand that I'm an old lady, and I will never like be like, you shouldn't do that, because like, it's, I don't find that I'm like, unless they're gonna legitimately hurt themselves or other people, I'm like, go be a kid, but like, I can't be a kid with you right now. Like, this is where I need to bow out from this.
I still feel like you do that to me, and I'm not that much younger than
I'm like, you go drinking until 4 a.m. It's midnight for me.
That's not what I do.
How old are you?
I'm 25.
Oh, you're a child.
So the one time a year I drink alcohol is what Kristen's referring to.
Oh,
no, I'm just joking. I mean,
I think it's important in your 20s to like literally do whatever you want, and like, it's the time to like be like not restricted, you know, because yeah. I've seen it the other way where I have a lot of friends who like, you know, that I grew up with that definitely didn't go into like the culture industry that I went into, and or just meeting people over the years where like there is a pressure from society to like go to college, like get a job, like whatever, hit all these marks. And I think that there is an aspect where when you have to follow all the rules and like hit these marks in the right time, you end up being like suppressed in life, you know?
Yeah. For
sure. And I think ever since, you know, I met a lot of these skaters and other athletes too, like in action sports culture, there's just a level of like freedom and youthfulness that no matter how old you are, like you just are alive. And I think that's so valuable. And that's why like, I'm really like committed to sharing skateboarding, because even if you're 40 and you try it for the first time, like mm-hmm. you get the opportunity to feel that aliveness and that freedom mm-hmm. that just doesn't come with other activities, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's such a valuable like way to like live life. Even if you just try it once and you don't end up, you know, pursuing it, mm-hmm. you still get to like in that moment be like youthful. And that's something that at a lot of our adult programs, like Ashley is always kind of like prioritizing the idea of play, and like adults, like at our adult, we do an adult women's summer camp, and the average age is like 30, and like the oldest woman we had last summer was like 47, I think. She like dropped her kids off at like school and then came to like skateboard yeah. camp. And it was just like so cool to like give these hardworking professional women yeah. the chance to like play and like be yeah. kids. Like they don't get that, and I'm just right. like, that's such a gift to give a mom or like a professional woman who's literally like working hard and like just trying to like make it, you know, in life. So I think yeah. there's a lot of value in just being able to give someone that opportunity and encourage them to try, you know?
100%.
Yeah. I feel that way, like balancing my, like my career is not like stressful. But I find that, like, I love that I have skateboarding as, like, an outlet and an excuse. I can't hold my phone when I'm skateboarding. And it's, like, you cannot work. Like, you are not allowed to work while you're right. doing this.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, like a gift to give to somebody. Like,
yeah,
when
absolutely.
You are socialized to be expected to be a full-time mother and a full-time professional person, or one or the other, like either way, like your life is expected to be consumed by
mm-hmm.
serving this certain purpose, and like skateboarding just like breaks all of those rules and expectations.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing is important for like,
yeah, it's so
yeah.
Yeah, mental health, physical health, like you have to be present. And there's just, I think there's just nowadays, like you're right, like there's not that many opportunities to show up for yourself. Like you're doing things as you get older, especially as a woman, like you're doing things for other people. That's like how the society is designed.
Mm-hmm.
So to actually choose to do something for yourself is like rare and unique.
Yeah.
So I think I love our adult programs. It's like the best thing ever to like see like a 40-year-old mom like learn to skate, and her kid doesn't even skate, you know, like that's the best.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh my God, I love it.
You know?
So, yeah.
So what does the future hold for you and Skate Like a Girl?
I think definitely like the train is moving very quickly, mm-hmm. with Skate Like a Girl. I think, I'm definitely proud to be part of the organization, because I'm like the oldest person in terms of like the directors. So it's cool to be part of an organization that is very like mm-hmm. skater led, youth led. And I think in the future, like I'll be on the board at some point. And definitely like it would be like so satisfying to know that there's more and more job opportunities created, and like we're already doing that. So like,
yeah.
Definitely continuing to like sustain the organization, so that we can have things like careers and job opportunities for people who have been in it. And that's what's so cool about Skate Like a Girl. Like I'm sure Kristen has shared this with you, but like she started out as just a participant and now she is the ED, you know, so having that pathway and being able to like give people the opportunity to like train and learn and grow and like evolve and grow up inside of like an organization is really cool. And we're working on things like health insurance for the staff, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think just continuing to like have Skate Like a Girl grow, but in like a sustainable way. That's been the focus for the past few years. And every time we have, like, we just had our board meeting in Seattle like a few weekends ago, or it was like a month ago at this point. But I was just like, wow, I'm like so proud to be part of this organization. So yeah, I think Skate Like a Girl definitely sustaining and growing. And we're also talking about like, how can we scale in a way that isn't just adding more cities? Cause I think that's very slow. And at some point you can't, like, we've talked about it. Like, you can't, there's a level of like dilute, like it gets diluted when you try to be in like everywhere around the world. Cause that's like the most common question we get. It's like, hey, when are you guys going to start a chapter in so-and-so city? And I think what we're more excited about is to offer out the knowledge and the training and the mentorship so other people can start their own versions of, you know, similar to what we do. And there's not one way to do it. There's tons of other organizations around the world doing these amazing like social movement skateboarding projects. And I think if we can, if people are interested in learning from Skate Like a Girl, like for us to be able to share that out in a scalable way, is something that we're all like really excited about.
Growing. There's like a campaign going on right now, right?
Like we do, so every year, obviously, so we're a 501c3, so fundraising and money is always like a focus. And it was funny because when I first stepped into being the development director for the SFA chapter, I was like, I don't know anything about working for a nonprofit. And then I was like, actually, women's skateboarding has been literally a nonprofit, like not profitable for the past decade. So I was like, wait, I do know something. I do know something about working for a not profitable cause. We're doing, every year we do our All Hands on Deck Giving Tuesday campaign. And it's not just the Giving Tuesday campaign, but over the holiday season, we do a bunch of different fundraising events. So Seattle has an art show. We have a, in the Bay, we call it Skate Bay, and we have, it's like a party and a vendor fair for like local artists and skaters. And then, yeah, we just are kind of using the opportunity to like ask our community to contribute how they can. And we have some new merch coming out and stuff like that. So, I think that's one of the hardest things as a nonprofit is that, you know, it's a fine line of like always asking people for money, but then just being strategic about it and knowing, you know, that there are people who want to contribute. That's coming up. And then we're moving WAF to September of 2020, which is exciting. It's always been in May for the longest time. And we're moving it back for a few reasons, but just like more time to plan. Next year's going to be pretty action-packed with the Olympics and other events. So I'm excited for that. And then we're going to have the second annual Bay Jam. So we started an event in the Bay this year, inspired by WAF, because it was kind of like, well, we could like do something like that here in the Bay Area. Because there's like an amazing scene here in the Bay, like in SF and Oakland and everywhere else. So we wanted to create an opportunity for skaters to like get some shine and love and like compete and or just have like a public space to like showcase their skills. So we'll be doing that again. And I think for me, slumber party for sure. Like as me and Vanessa are like, you know, getting things dialed, and like we're really excited to work with like other people. Like the whole goal of slumber party is to again like create opportunities for the community. And like Vanessa's and I were both like really passionate about like giving back to the community, because again we're like older now, and just to like create opportunities for other people is something that like is really important to both of us. So working with artists or designers, like a lot, Vanessa is a very like creative and artistic person, but she herself is not an artist, but that's like one of her big passions is to like work with other artists and designers so that the end product, the designs and all that stuff is sort of a collaborative effort of the community versus just like, this is, you know, my brand and my name. That's why it's like not necessarily focused around her. But yeah, she's had the idea to do slumber party for like years and years now. I've just been like writing her about it. I'm like, you gotta do this. Like, when is it? Like, you gotta it needs to happen. And she was just had like some concerns and timing, and just it's scary to like be, I think, a pro skateboarder for your whole life. Like, that's literally the same job your whole life, and then to be like, okay, I'm like ready to like transition my career. So definitely like shout out to Vanessa for just being willing. That's what I love, I think, about skateboarders, and just also Vanessa, is that she is so resilient. Like anything that comes her way, like, yes, like just like anyone else, there's fears and all that stuff, but you know, she's able to like get through that and work through it and like be real about it and like be honest. She's like, this is where I'm at. And to like continue to like grow is definitely something like that. It's just super inspiring. I'm like, dude, like, you got to tell your story. Like, there's so much everyone can learn from like all the different things that you've overcome, you know? So
she's on the list of future podcasts.
Yes. Yeah.
And find her sitting in one place for long enough.
That would be the biggest challenge. Your schedule is pretty wild.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, we're really excited to see what comes of this, and obviously, if we can help with anything.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hell yeah! I'm so excited for Wheels of Fortune. We were just talking about that.
We just blocked our calendars, actually.
Nice.
Because as you know, it needs to be on the calendar.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Hopefully everyone blocks out that date.
Let's repeat the date so everyone listening can.
I should know this off the top of my head. Okay, it's September
10th to 13th.
There you go. Adrian knows what's up. September 10th to 13th.
The 10th is my mom's birthday and 13 is my lucky number. That's really why I remembered this.
Okay, good to know.
And when is the SF Bay Jam?
The Bay Jam will be probably October 10th. It's usually the second weekend of October.
Cool. And you guys just had that anyways, because that was what Jamie flew out for, right?
Jamie was there. Yeah. And we did it within, so there's already this festival that exists at Town Park. It's actually a really historical, amazing community event called the Life is Living Festival. Town Park is inside DeFremery Park is what the park is called, but it's also known as Lil Bobby Hutton Park. And he was one of the original members of the Black Panthers. So there's a lot of like history and culture around West Oakland and just continuing to like elevate the local community. Mm-hmm. So Town Park is really special in that sense. So it was awesome, and we're hoping to continue that event there and just bring people to the Bay. Like, there's just so much, like, in terms of skating and just culture, like, it's an exciting place to be. And like, I definitely would love to see more people come out.
Yeah.
Like, do some skate trips.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to add that to our list. Our ever-growing
list. The
travel
journey, yes.
What's in store for you guys? Can I turn it around and interview you?
No, I think you can. That was, like, basically the last 3 hours before we spoke to you was, like, a 2020 meeting. So, what are we doing?
We've got hopefully an NYCSP official event collab. So
nice.
Pretty stoked about that.
Yeah. I think just a lot of different ways to like bring what we're already doing and making it a little bit more substantial or more rounded than what we're actually have been doing.
I think we've talked about this, like, a lot of Quell has been a response to the community asking for something or in some way showing us what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we've kind of gotten a handle of like what people are asking for, what they want from Quell, and what we can physically like provide in terms of like just like our two people's bandwidth, it's a side project, but then also like budget wise and stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like, we're really starting to get a handle of that. So this year, we're pretty excited to start creating things with a little bit more of a vision rather than just, like, this reactionary, like, okay, girls want a meetup, let's do a meetup. Okay, girls want a contest, let's do a contest. Like, this year is more about, like, all right, we know what everyone likes, you know what we like and what we're good at. Like, how can we, like, refine that?
Yeah. Awesome.
Also, I was totally not trying to be like elusive. I just literally can't remember what we put on. I'm like, what do? We, I know
a lot of it's not completely confirmed with the people that we want to collaborate right. with too. So I wouldn't want to like put anyone on the spot.
Or you should, and yeah, then like it'll that. Like happen. It. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I know the other issue with Jamie just came out, but I'm really excited for our next issue.
I know
that sounds crazy, but it's just like, that's my baby. And I mean, yeah. Quell's my baby. And if anything, that's like really the second child, but
yeah,
I'm excited. That's the fun part.
Dude, I'm so hyped on the print. Like, print is not dead. And if you do it right, it's just like so special. Like, we can spend so many hours scrolling on digital content, and there's so much money and effort that goes into digital content, which is great. But like, print, like being able to hold something in your hand is just like, you cannot, that will never change. No matter, like, I swear, even with VR, like,
yeah,
being able to like, I'm such a like souvenirs, like hoarders type person. Like, I've kept like every issue of SG Mag, and I keep a lot of the print stuff that like, you know, like I was a part of. And so I just think that's really cool that you guys are continuing to focus on that. I would love to see like an annual like edition that's like full page, like hard copy, like coffee table, like full on, like. Yeah.
I know, that would be crazy. I actually, so obviously I'm a designer, graphic designer, and like in advertising, but I have like friends, and a friend specifically who like got, long story short, got the go ahead to make this like hardcover book. I'm like, that is the craziest, most difficult thing I could ever imagine. It's like, he left his job to do freelance, but basically that was so he had like the ability to make this hardcover book. I was like, I don't.
You guys can do it.
We could do it.
You gotta do it.
Yeah, that's issue 10, actually. That's the perfect idea. Okay,
that's perfect.
That's
all right. We heard it here first. Issue 10. Hard copy.
I mean, that means that you're
full
like,
page.
With us for what is that? That issue 5 is 3 years. So that means we have to be 6 years old. I think in 3 more years, I would be able to make a hardcover
book. I
think
you can do that.
I think you do it sooner than 3 years.
That's maybe our 5th year anniversary. We'll be pinging you for some contacts then. Yeah. That's the real truth.
For sure.
The hardcover book.
Slumber Party will, you know, sponsor. We'll buy an ad. I don't know. Something. It'll happen.
I mean,
it starts with saying it first, and now it's real.
That's really true.
In the universe.
Yeah, that was
put it out there.
Is there anything else you wanted to share with us before I ask you my final question?
I mean, something that people have been asking me about is the bill AB467. I think that's definitely something.
Oh my god!
That would be probably. I don't know if people are curious
about that. Actually,
like, I want to ask me about that just because, like,
that's crazy.
Here's the reason why I would love to talk about it is because I think that's where the future is, like with skateboarders. Like, we talked about this at Pushing Borders too, but skateboarders are so passionate and like clearly authentic. And I think when you care so much about something, you can mobilize others, right? That's how skate parks are built, or like DIY spots like become legit, or like whatever it is, right? Like advocacy and like policy change. And the whole experience for me was like pretty, just, it was super like educational, because like I'm like the first to be like, I don't know anything about, you know, like the process of like politics and government and all that stuff. But
the Schoolhouse Rock video,
I know, it literally, I was just like, I went back and watched it, and I was like, this is literally what's happening right now. And like, I guess to back up a little bit, what happened was, my friend Corey Schumacher, she is an ex-pro surfer. She was a longboard world champion at one point back in the day, and she's always been an advocate for gender equity, gender equality, and she ended up in politics and in government. She ran for mayor of Carlsbad, which is in San Diego in California, and she's currently on city council in Carlsbad. But it was like, I think for a long time she was in the place of where a lot of us were, which was just kind of like being at the effect of the industry and being like, this is fucked up, like we need to speak out about it, but kind of like not really being able to be effective at any actual change. And that's kind of similar to like where Mimi was and Cara Beth and with mm-hmm. the Alliance and advocating for equal prize money. Like that was a great example of a success story. Mm-hmm. But even with ESPN, it's like, you know, they promised equal prize money and then that is still held up true to this day. So definitely shout out to them, but they took away women's vert. So it's like, yes, like you can, you know, things can happen and change can happen, but until there's like something holding you to account, like accountability, then in this, you know, kind of capitalistic market that we live in, anyone could do anything they want, right? But yeah. when something gets put into law, like that's when things change for real. And so that's like, even with like Title IX, right, which was, I think, in the 70s, like we grew up in a world where there was like a girls' soccer team and a girls' basketball team like at our schools because of Title IX, right? And like, I didn't even know what Title IX was until I grew up, because that law changed like my world where I had access to these opportunities. And so with AB 467, basically Corey hit me up and she was, no worries.
You want to get water?
Okay, I'm like, otherwise this is gonna be me coughing in the background. I'm like,
okay, we're pausing. Do you want me to get water? Are you good?
Remember when I said I was sick for 13 days?
Oh man.
Make it still 15.
No, I can't even imagine. My chest is like hurting, which is the telltale sign that I'm getting sick again, and I'm like, please stop. I get these like weird chest pains where I just basically I'm like, my lungs could be collapsing, but I'm pretty sure they're not.
Stay away from Kristen, that's for sure.
True. I do think, yeah, I don't know, I feel like I was sick and then I saw Kristen, so who knows.
Okay,
sleep is the key. Just sleep for as long as you can. That's like literally the answer to everything.
I think Thanksgiving is coming up.
Yeah, sleep is so underrated.
I love sleeping. It's not underrated in my life.
Okay. How many hours of sleep do you get?
Me?
Yeah, like on average.
8.
Okay, good. Awesome. How about you, Adrian?
I'm pretty sure I do. Also, okay, good. I mean, awesome. This is even worse. I go to sleep at like 9:30, 10, and I'm up at like 7:45.
That's amazing. That's
perfect.
Yeah. That's really good. That's healthy. People
don't care. We're like, I'd rather cancel plans to sleep than go out.
Sleep is like the healthiest thing, literally, that anyone could do. I'm proud of you guys. Keep it up.
Thank you.
Somehow I'm still here sick.
That should be a new podcast question. How many hours of sleep do you get?
Yeah.
How many hours of sleep do you get?
Pretty much like eight to nine, actually, sometimes. Now my elderly years. It's so important. Like, it's crazy. When I was your age, I was like.
When I was 25, I probably got like 3 hours of sleep. Like,
I was like a shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, I'm sure we shaved years off our life, like living that lifestyle of like not sleeping and like partying and stuff. So you're better off. Like, you should be the role model for everyone out there.
Anyway,
the bill. So Corey basically called me up and she's like, hey, like, we're writing this new bill for the state of California. She's working with an assembly member, Tasha Borner Horvath. Her name is always like a tongue twister to say, but she's an assembly member in California. It's so cool. Like, she's literally just a mom, and it's her like entry into politics was just like, they were trying to get like a stoplight built like across the street from her kid's school, and like they made it happen. Right. And she was like, shit, like, I gotta do more. So they wrote this bill that called Equal Pay for Equal Play, that basically was inspired by the Mavericks surf contest and all the stuff that went down with like the World Surf League around like equal prize money. And it basically says that if there is a like a competition that's held on state lands, which skate contests aren't, but like surf contests are sometimes, like state beaches, that if the organizer is needing a permit, which they do, if you're like going to hold a surf contest on like a state beach, you got to like apply for a permit, that they would need to have equal prize money for all the gender kind of categories. Which makes sense, right? Because that's like, I guess the argument is like, in California, if you're like a state employee, like a postal worker, I think, which is a state job, They would not pay a man and a woman different salaries. That is illegal, right? So the argument is that, you know, if you're going to hold this contest and it's a professional contest, like, you need to pay everyone the same, which makes sense. And it's like, why isn't this already happening? So they wrote this bill. And what I learned is that there's a very, like, specific process into, like, getting a bill to become a law. And one of them is being very simple and concise and not adding in all these other complications, because then that's where it gets held up, where people are like, well, what if? And the bill doesn't get signed because it's too many factors. Because sometimes people, like, bills get passed and it's for a good intention, but then it ends up affecting a group of people that they didn't even think about, and they're like, oh shit, that sucks, right? So the more simple you keep it, the easier it is to, like, have it be passed through. And one thing that came up was inclusion. So they're like, well, what if that contest just doesn't have women at all? So they're like, you know, but if we add inclusion and pay, it becomes two different conversations, and then it complicates it. So, like, that is the next step, I think, is inclusion. But then here's the argument too, is like, say, like, exposure or Wheels of Fortune happened on, like, say you needed a state permit, like, somehow the roads, or at some point maybe there'll be skate parks that exist on, like, state lands, then the inclusion law would mean that men would need to be in the contest. So then it's kind of like the equity versus equality conversation, where if we really look, we're like, okay, in the future, yeah, like, every event will be equal, lots of whatever, but then I'm like, I don't think, like, what would your guys' thoughts be if, like, WAF hat was by law, say WAF was in California or, like, Bayjam or something like that, we had to have men there, which it's not like we're excluding men, but it's just that if we're looking at equity, like, we have to create, you know, like, the opportunities first before we talk about equality, So, anyways, that was one of the things that I learned along the way. But so this bill is specifically about pay. And so the process was that I went twice to the state capitol to speak in front of, like, a hearing. First, it was, like, assembly members, and then it was, like, senators. And it was actually really cool, because, like, it's a trip how, like, it seems so, like, impossible or, like, far away, but literally, like, I showed up as a witness. Like, I went in there, like, set, they were like, just talk about Skate Like a Girl or, like, what you do. And, like, the senators were so stoked. They, you could tell, like, they're, like, so excited to hear from, like, a real person, like, in the world. They sit through so many hearings of all these different, like, crazy laws, and they were, like, falling asleep. And then as soon as we started talking about, like, skateboarding or surfing or cycling, even they got so stoked. Like, one of the senators was, like, an older guy, and he's like, I used to skateboard back in my day, and he's like, that's so cool. And so that was just cool to know that they were, like, pumped to, like, be connected to people. And I think there's this idea that, like, politicians are so far removed from people, and I don't actually think it's true. So anyways, it was just cool to be a part of the process. Like, shout out to Corey for, like, involving me. So currently this bill is going to get, it's going to become a law January 1st, 2020. Gavin Newsom, who's, like, you know, the governor of California right now, signed it off. And again, like, most immediately it affects, like, surf contests and cycling, you know, competitions and things like triathlons and marathons. But I think it is an important step towards just opening the door for equal pay, period. And then, yeah, Corey was like, are you, like, you should consider, like, going into politics. And I'm like, I don't know. But, like, I just think it would be cool to see. I think that's kind of the evolution where, like, skaters are, can go and, like, actually, like, create real, like, change in policy and things like that will be, like, game changers for everyone.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
It really is. Like, I don't think of politicians as, like, people, like, regular people. And I think that having more people like us is, like, a step towards like, closing that gap. And I think in a way, this, you being involved in passing this bill and, like, other people in action sports also, like, is doing a service for our community in the sense of, like, what you're saying, like, that is a path that people can go into that are involved in skateboarding action sports that can make, like, a real effect on the world.
Yeah.
In, like, a very meaningful way. And, like, I would be more interested in politics. I think if there were more people in it, involved in it that yeah. like I related to on a personal level. Exactly. But yeah. it just feels so like so far away from like any, I can't possibly have an effect on that.
Yeah.
You know? And then like seeing that you did, it's like, oh wow, like, okay, this is like, this is real life. Okay.
Yeah. I think, and that's gonna start to change. I think in like the next yeah. decade we'll see yeah. that, which is exciting for sure. So
is there a reason why it's Amy, right? Amy, what were the numbers again?
AB467.
Oh, okay. I was like, is there a reason why it's called Amy?
I don't know. AB467. I don't know the, you know, the letters in the code. Sometimes
they're like named after people or whatever. I don't know. So yeah. I was like, oh, is it like a. No, just Adrian can't hear. That's everything in my life. I think something else, and I'm like excited. And then I'm like, oh, I just don't know how to read. So that's haha. No, that's really inspiring for me, though. Yeah. That's, yeah. I mean, it's true that you, like, I think there's so many different things that you come across in life where you're like, you'll never be able to start this, or you'll never be able to do that. And it's like, why not? And yeah. I think you kind of really proved that, at least there, I think with Mafia, you did to me at least. Mm-hmm. But that's really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
I mean, I think that's what I would want everyone to take away from all the stuff that we're doing is like, yeah, if there's not something that you like or mm-hmm. you feel is, you know, right, or like that is just mm-hmm. doesn't exist, then to like go out and create it, you know, and to like, I think just try, you know, I think
100%,
like might as well, because you only have one life to live. Might as well try and fail than not try, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
As Yoda said, do or do not, there is no try, right? And do you care yeah. about Star Wars? I don't know. I do, but...
Isn't there a meme going around right now? Like, tiny yes. Yoda meme?
I can't.
Yoda meme?
On the... Okay, so... this is so... This is your own.
The things that you yeah, are doing, like, on the
fully
internet.
Circling back to youth. person or whatever, youth mentor.
Adrian's my youth mentor.
That's awesome.
Disney Plus just came out.
Okay.
Everyone's talking so they about have that.
The Star Wars series, The Mandalorian. I don't know.
This is
seen,
a podcast. That was
with
me making a confused face at him.
Silence is both of them looking at me. And so the Mandalorian, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but The Mandalorian okay. is like a Star Wars, like very early prequel.
Okay.
That's like part of Disney Plus. Okay. And in it, there's a baby Yoda.
Oh.
And it's like, because it's a prequel, it's like Yoda, but really baby. And it's very cute. But I don't know what that means. But the meme is just like, there's a bunch of different memes. I literally hate that I'm saying this. There's a bunch of different memes where one of them was my favorite, where it was like the Yoda like looking up at, it's like looking up at something, but you don't see what it is because you're seeing the Yoda. And then it's like a bunch of different like really wholesome things, like me looking up at my dad while he's putting like batteries in my Game Boy. That's like one of the examples.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I'll post that meme in the bio of this podcast.
Okay. Yes.
I don't remember how we started talking about this, but
I just said do or do not, there is no try. That was,
yes,
you had a lot better advice.
And the moral
than my Yoda.
Your Yoda story is that you're my new youth mentor.
Yeah, but I need a youth mentor.
Yeah, you gotta find like a 15-year-old.
Yeah,
we do. Unless someone says that we should make a quell TikTok, then that's over.
I think Ruthless Ruthie.
Oh yeah, she's our youth mentor.
Youth
I agree.
Mentor.
Shouts out to her. She'll be our youth
she's
mentor.
She's the best.
That's awesome.
She competed at WAF.
Ruthie?
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool.
I think she made. I met her. She placed. She placed in her category.
WAF was a giant blur to me.
Yeah, I
respect that. She had the Skate Witches denim jacket. If you.
Oh
saw
yeah, I remember. Okay. Yeah, that was sick. I was like, custom jacket.
Yeah, no. She's awesome. So.
She's from New York?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice. From New York State. She doesn't live in the city. And we end up hanging out with her at Second Nature Skate Park. And her mom is actually super rad.
The nicest person.
She's just like, she's about her kids in like the coolest way, you know.
That's awesome.
She gets off too.
Nice, yeah.
Hanging out with them the whole time. Yeah, her name's Georgia.
Shout out to Georgia.
You can follow her on Instagram, Cabin Mom Georgia, because she's a cabin mom at Woodward.
Aw, that's awesome. Ooh, that reminds me. I have an important announcement. Is that I don't know if you guys saw any of the content, but we are going back to YMCA camp for the summer. Did you guys see any of that? So YMCA camp used to be called Element Camp. It's in California. It's like probably 3 hours south of the Bay and 3 hours north of LA, but it's in the Sequoia National Forest, on that, right near the Sequoia National Forest. It's literally the most magical place for skaters, and it used to be Element, but it's not Element anymore. So it's just YMCA camp. And it's literally like 5 skate parks in the woods. There's a lake, there's swimming, there's a launch ramp into the lake, there's camping, there's like everything you can imagine.
We're coming.
So here's the announcement, and it'll be up hopefully on the website soon, but we're doing, so it's historically been youth only, right? So ages 8 to 17. I know, right? But we're going to do a 3-day adult camp this week, because we're gonna, so Skate Like a Girl's, like, we went last year as sort of like not unofficial, but we went as guest instructors, and it was kind of just like a last minute, like, okay, let's go and like be part of the girls week, and it was amazing. So we're gonna go back this 2020, and it's gonna be in July, where we're gonna do a 3-day adult camp, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the youth camp will be Sunday through Friday. But you get to camp, there's literally 5 skate parks, like everything you can imagine, swimming, like campfire, like, and the food is amazing. They have the chefs there are like amazing, like, I don't know, they're just like the most amazing chefs. It was like a group of women, and we taught them to skate. It was so cool, because like they had been at camp all summer, like we got there at the end, and they were just like taking care of everyone, and we're like, dude, do you guys want to learn to skate? And they were like, some of them were a little shy, and we're like, all right, this is like, if you want to learn to skate, like, this is a chance. So we did a clinic just for the staff, the kitchen staff, and they were like so hyped. It was just so cool, because they were like working so hard, and like they were cooking special vegan meals for like certain people. Exactly. And it was like, we want you guys to have fun. Like, imagine being at a skate camp like all summer and like not ever skating, right?
Yeah,
like,
no, yeah, that's awful.
So we taught them to skate, and they were like hyped. And so yeah, we're going back next year. So you heard it here first. Like, you guys need to come. Like, it's going to be amazing. No.
There's so many things we're blocking our calendar for.
I have the dates. Let's see.
We can bleep them out if it's not public.
I mean, well, it'll be official. Like, registration will be official probably in 2020, but July 17th, 18th, and 19th.
I'm literally putting it in my calendar right now. I get, like, a lot of summer Fridays at this new job, so...
But if you like nature, oh, and there's no cell phone service there. So like, you literally just go off the grid, which is either like horrifying for some people or just like freeing. I don't know. Depends on your job.
That is horrifying for me, but I'll deal with it.
You'll probably have anxiety for the first 24 hours, and then you'll just get over it.
Yeah. It feels good.
I'm not really a nature girl. I grew up in Miami, so it's never been my thing, but it sounds too good to be true. So
just imagine like all the skate park, like dream skate, like all to yourself too. That's the thing.
Right.
So
I feel good about this experience already. And
that you didn't go on.
No, we're not even going. I feel good about hearing about it. Like the negative aspects that would be negative towards me as a human, I don't feel are going to,
you can handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's like cabins and bathrooms and showers. It's not like you're roughing it. And there's like hot food every meal, you know, but it's like, there's something transformative about like unplugging, not driving at all. Like, cause once you're there, you're like just there, you know?
Yeah.
And just being like quiet, you know?
Yes.
So,
but okay, anyways. Come in.
Okay. We'll do it.
I'm sold.
You guys are invited.
One last question to leave with, which actually might be, we ask everyone this question, and it might actually be kind of hard for you, I feel like, because you are so involved with teaching people a skateboard, but what's your one piece of advice for someone who wants to start skating?
One piece of advice for someone who wants to start skating? well, The first obvious answer would be like, come to a Skate Like a Girl event if possible. And if not, like, I get that not everyone listening is living in, like, likely they're not living in Seattle, Portland, or the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. I would say that, like, for me, it's always been like just like finding one friend to do it with, like, that's at the same level. So, like, a lot of the things that I've like tried in my life, I've just had more success when I had just one other person with me, you know? So, because there's just so much like about being able to share it with someone, mm-hmm. you know, if you both suck together, like, or you're both good together, like, I don't know. I think that it just makes it so much more rewarding. So, like, I think that that is one thing that has helped keep me in things, is just finding one person who's down to be like, all right, let's do this. And I also just feel like it's kind of cliche, but that, you know, you got to start somewhere. So, like, just sucking and like not being good at it in the beginning. And this was something I dealt with, which is why I didn't skate for so long. Cause, like, literally I was like, all right, there's me and there's pro skaters, you know? Right. But just getting that, like, being okay with being a beginner at something, especially as an adult, like, there's real value to that. I think as we get older, we tend, at least for me, I tended to like only do things I was good at, because I was like, you know, it's just more comfortable. Like, you're not putting yourself at risk. Like, you don't have to be vulnerable. But
nothing society is telling you that you have right. to do anything other than what you already know how to do.
Exactly. So to like push yourself out of that comfort zone is actually a really healthy like way to live. If you think about kids, like, they're always being put in these situations where they're vulnerable or beginners or like at risk. Mm-hmm. And I think as we get older, we tend to not do that. And that's why people were just like waiting to die. You know, it's like, you're just like living life smaller and smaller and smaller.
It's true.
And true. I know. Right. And then to the point where it's like, you don't even like need to leave your house anymore. Right. Like, we know some older people that are like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's, there's value and like, it's healthy to like be scared and to like be a beginner and like be young again, which is like, you're not an expert in anything. So yeah, I don't know if that's helpful for someone, but I think that,
I think so.
Just being able to like embrace being a beginner at something is really valuable. Like,
that was definitely life-changing for me. Like,
yeah.
I went from like,
for a second, I thought you were like, that advice was life changing.
No,
are you starting to skate?
I'm a beginner.
Yeah.
But yes, the advice.
Yeah. I just thought that was your like initial reaction. You were like, what you just said was so life changing for me. I was like,
this whole experience has been life changing, Kim. Thank you.
Damn, I'm honored.
I do feel very good about this experience. That's such a loser thing to say when you're like at a party. You're like, guys, I'm having so much fun. You're like, don't say that.
I say it, fuck it, like, who cares, you know? I'm just pumped on what you guys are doing, because I feel like the East Coast, like, I feel like for so long, so much of the industry and the culture was dictated by what's been happening in California, because that's where the companies are. And I know that's not necessarily true for like all of street skating, but like, if we look at the bigger picture of like action sports and whatever, a lot of it's been like very SoCal focused, and everyone, people always say like, oh, in order to be a pro skater, you need to like move to LA or move to San Diego or whatever it is. And I just don't think that's true anymore. And I also think that it's cool to diversify and know that skateboarding, like, for women and groups and meetups are happening in all these other places, especially globally. But I think, you know, what you guys are doing in New York is exciting, and it makes me like want to come visit, because like, I've really haven't had many reasons to come out to New York. And also, New York is like intimidating. I feel like for anyone who doesn't live in New York City, like, there's a level of influence and like culture that is so powerful that it's obviously amazing, but at the same time, like, if you're not in it, you kind of feel like, oh, like, I'm on the outside. So I think it's cool that you guys are like doing what you're doing and making like skateboarding specifically, you know, accessible in New York City. I think it's awesome. And I wish I was like 22 and living in New York right now, so I could like go to your meetups
and some rage.
Yeah, and sleep on like a tiny little, like mm-hmm. someone's apartment that's like this big. I yeah. still can't get over like how tiny everything is in New York. Like it's wild. But it's so great too. Like you're so yeah. close and like you don't yeah. need a car. Yeah. Everything's like an arm's length away, literally. Like, awesome. And I think that's unique. So
yeah. I think it's funny that you said that. I'm like, I'm working for a company based in San Diego now. And a lot of my like interactions with them is like explaining like why you can't like apply the same like theory that worked in San Diego to yeah. something in New York. And usually the reason is like, there's just not enough space to do that. Or like that bar, a hard kombucha company, like that bar doesn't have like enough fridge storage because there's not enough space. Like forget how different New York can be, and like this mm-hmm. This job has really been like reminding me you know, having this conversation with the West Coast all of the time, like how different New York is. Right.
Yeah,
it's just like crazy.
Yeah, I think that it's special to live in a city where you don't have to drive and like deal with traffic and stuff like that. Like it makes your ability to connect to people and like feel a part of society like so much more aware. There's like studies about that for like the like crazy like horrifying like mass shooters is like it's always like in some suburban town where they're disconnected and isolated, and like yeah. if you live in a place like New York City, even if you don't talk to anyone, you don't have friends, like you have to like be physically around people if you're like taking the mm-hmm. subway or walking down the street. Yeah. So whether you make eye contact or not, like that level of human connection is so yeah. important for humans that if you live in, you know, like suburbia or somewhere that's more rural, you just don't have that. And it literally like, I think affects you as a person, which is why like, you know, solitary confinement is like one of like the worst forms of punishment, because you're yeah. literally like, they're taking away the ability to connect with people. Right, and that's yeah, like a yeah. form of punishment. Right. So like, right. it's crazy how like sometimes like living in the burbs, yeah. like that's how it can be, you know?
Yeah.
Which is and wild.
All
so.
The time that you spend in your car by yourself.
Yes. Which is why like podcasts are really helpful, because then at least you get to be like, it's like the closest thing to like talking to other people or like being in a conversation with other people. Yeah. So I think that's why there's like this kind of like growth and yeah. interest in being in a live yeah. like raw conversation with people. Side note, last thing I'll share with you guys is that yes. me and Ashley are actually starting a show, but it's not, I guess we could call it a podcast, but we're gonna have video as well. Cool. But we both mentor a lot of people, like younger girls, and Ashley's a fitness coach as well. And she's a skate instructor, so we both were like, how can we take what we're doing and like scale it? Mm-hmm. So it's a show, it's called Squeezing the Juice, and it's going to be a platform to like also mentor younger girls, because like I'm on the phone with like so many different people,
yeah,
and I love the one-on-one connection, but I'm also like, well, for every girl that reaches out to us that is kind of takes that step to like email and like has the courage, yeah. there's probably like 10 other girls that aren't going to reach out. Right. So like, how can we create sort of this, like, it's almost just like a conference call where
right.
like people from around the world can join in and just kind of feel like less alone, I think. So it's not necessarily about skateboarding, but it's going to be just, that's the natural tie. Right. But it's more focused on mentorship. And then Ashley's passion is like nutrition and physical health. So things like, you know, strength training and rehab and all that stuff, which I'm learning so much from her about. And also just being able to like offer not really advice, but just shared experiences, around like how to, you know, navigate your way through,
yeah,
you know, life in this industry or even just like your community. So definitely we'll share that with you guys when we're still, it's like very much still in the like building phases, but
we will be happy to share that. That sounds yeah. amazing.
And we'll have to, and you guys will be on the show for sure.
An inner podcast.
Yes,
yeah.
Inception. Where can people find you on the internet?
I guess Instagram, just at Kim Woozy is my Instagram handle. I'm not that on top of Instagram, to be honest. Like, yeah. I feel bad because I don't really stay on top of the DMs. Yeah. but
someone can.
Yeah, and I feel like I hope that people can like just show for Skate Like a Girl at least to like just come to the events and talk to us. Like I'd rather connect in real life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Instagram, I mainly keep it, you know, focused on what's happening in our community, and just like, you know, sharing out what's going on. But I would say that's like the best place.
Perfect.
You can also email me.
What is the Slumber Party Instagram, just in case?
It's at SLMBRPARTY. So Slumber is spelled SLMBR, and then party is like the full word. Woo. It's in Vanessa's bio and my bio as well. So more coming soon with that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think thank you very much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And honestly, just thank you for what you're doing. Like, you guys are carrying the torch. I'm so proud, even though it's not like I didn't have any like direct influence, but
really trippy thing, but thank you.
Yeah. I just hope that like in 5 years there's gonna be like, you know, the next you guys, you know?
Yeah.
Like more people making things happening in like around the world in different places and just pursuing, you know, what you're passionate about. Whether you turn it into a job or not, like I think either way. But just to do something that's fulfilling, that's about like giving back to other people. That's what I see about you guys, is like it's for yourselves, but also it's impacting so many people. So that's so important.
Thanks.
Yes. Wow.
It's almost hard hearing it, because like what you're saying, like we didn't start it necessarily to like do it for anyone specific, but as like time goes on, you're like, oh, well, this person, like they need this in their community. So I'm going to like, now that I have this voice here, I'm going to use it to help with that. You know, wouldn't I? So.
And I think that just goes back to like being like, it's kind of a blanket statement, but just being women and like having empathy, it's like that will never not be valuable, you know, like 100%. Being down to like contribute to others or being down to like make space for other people, that's always going to be fulfilling, one, and it will always like basically like touch people in a way that like other things won't, you know. If you're doing it for yourself or trying to get rich or famous, it's like that'll burn out real quick. So
Shout
out to you guys, Quail Skateboarding.
Thanks, Kim.
We'll talk to you a lot offline because there's so many things coming up and I'm really excited.
Yes.
Cool.
Including the camp we're now going to. So
Yes.
I'm so serious. I wrote that in my calendar, so that's basically
it'll change your life. Like I swear, like we took a crew of our volunteers and literally everyone's like, I cannot wait to go back. Like it's just life changing.